Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
People try to put us to down.
Talking about my generation.
Just because we get around.
Talking about my generation.
Yeah, you're on the Nightlife. I'm Matt Bevan, and I'm in the millennial generation, aka Gen Y, aka Generation Me. I'm sure if you watched commercial TV news tonight, you would have come across another term for it as well. Essentially, I'm talking about everyone who is currently between the ages of 15 and 35, although some definitions spread a little further than that as well. Like a lot of people in my age cohort, I've found it difficult to afford a home in the city I work in. But also, like a lot of people my age, I've done a fair bit of overseas travel. My father first went overseas in his 40s, but I'll have visited at least 20 countries by the time I'm 30. We're discussing my generation tonight, and the ones above and below, because we're talking about whether we have it harder or easier than our parents. We're also looking at a few more serious issues related to this as well. How many young people are living on the streets, and do we as a society support them enough, or should we be doing more? Talking about my generation tonight. My guest tonight for this discussion is Jackie McKenzie, who is the Policy and Advocacy Manager for Youth Action, the peak body for young people in New South Wales. Welcome to the program, Jackie. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Do you like The Who?
Yes, sure.
Excellent. First, let's define young people. Who exactly are we talking about when we say youth? Are we talking 15 to 35, as I was just talking about there?
Depends on where you are, but in New South Wales, and certainly for my organisation, we work or define young people as young people aged between 12 and 25.
12 and 25, so quite young, but yeah. I'm already out of that group. Do you think life for these generations, these younger generations, is getting easier or harder for them than the generations before?
I definitely think that things are certainly different for this generation than generations before. So young people are going to be, or this generation, I believe the first generation in a long time who could be worse off than their parents. So when we talk about that, we talk about the opportunities that were available to the boomer generation are gone.
Hmm. So what sort of opportunities are we talking about there?
The opportunities we tend to classify within this intergenerational challenge is that promise of study hard, get a job, buy a house, have a family. This is a world that was known to the boomer generation, but it's no longer the promise that, I guess, Gen Y are facing.
So that cause and effect, you can generally, in the past, you'd been able to imagine that leaving school, you could get the level of education that you're after, get a job that you will keep you, give you enough money to raise a family, and then you'll be able to buy a house and that sort of thing. That's the previous promise of previous generations.
Yeah, that's right. That social contract. That's
okay,
true.
And that's becoming more difficult for what main reasons?
It kind of sits in these three tenets of housing, employment, and education. So young people are locked out of the housing market. We've seen a decline of home ownership by almost 10% since 2002, and that's mainly for younger people and mainly for lower-income younger people. We also see that youth unemployment is double that of the general population. What's more is that some young people in Australia are even worse off than that. So we have hotspots of youth unemployment where it's 4 to 5 times that of the general population. We're also seeing, young people are gaining more education, so educational attainment is increasing, but so is the debt associated. So we're putting young people in this pressure cooker where they can't actually gain an asset of a house. Employment is more precarious and it's harder to get, but we also have more debt.
So is the issue, you say that education is sometimes easier to come by for younger generations, but that education, no matter how high a degree or level of trade qualification you get, you may struggle to get employment in that field.
That's right. And that's something to do with what we're seeing happen in the mismatch between education and employment. So work is changing, but we're not seeing young people being equipped to take a hold of these opportunities. But we're also seeing a longer stretch between when young people leave education and when they transition into full-time employment. In 1986, it used to be 1 year, and now we're seeing that transition take around 5 years.
Mm, okay. However, you know, I've had this conversation with members of my family in the past, and they'll say something like, look, you know, it may be difficult for you to buy into the housing market, but you have travelled overseas. You've had massive opportunities that weren't available to our parents' generation. If you get into full-time employment, then you have a pretty good chance of getting some maternity leave or something like that that wasn't always available to older generations. And more of our workforce is working in air-conditioned environments. Older generations may have more often worked in, you know, a hot factory or down a mine with a pickaxe and that sort of thing. So in certain ways, they would argue that life is easier for our generations. Is that, are they wrong in that argument?
I think that there's facts, and facts come from the generation that we're in, so Gen Y, but we also see facts coming from the Boomer generation, and we can trade off facts to no end. But I think the situation is, how do we create opportunity and how do we create stability for this generation? And we do see people start to refer to that or defer to their own experience. So, you know, when I was 20, this was the state of affairs and this was how we did things. And we see that play off at the expense of what's happening for young people now. So this conversation and the struggle between the generations is about how do we explain a different lived experience? We do that through comparisons.
Mm. Okay. So just to explain that a bit for me. So a different lived experience, you're saying that it's not equivalent. And going and comparing these two things isn't helpful.
I think that's right. And I mean, the main issue around generational inequality is certainly coming down to wealth and how the wealth is transferred between the generations. But surely we need to look at what opportunities are there for this generation and how they differ to the previous generation, so young people's lived experiences aren't ignored.
Okay. There's obviously young people in general. They go to schools, have family and go to university and they find a job. There's a lot of people who have success. But there are, you mentioned, pockets of people who are really struggling. Where are these pockets of people?
We see this happening, for example, in New South Wales. I believe it is the Hunter region sees a bubble of youth unemployment that's around 21%. Mm-hmm. Outback Queensland is 28%. We're also seeing differences between regional and rural, particularly with the decline of manufacturing and mining. But there's also, for example, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander young people are still lagging behind in terms of employment stakes.
It's quite by quite a bit,
yes,
as well. Yeah. So you know, there's often a statistical difference with Aboriginal people that is disturbing. Now, what are some of the stats around youth unemployment? So more specifically, you know, mass youth unemployment, but even homelessness, difficult areas, I suppose.
Yeah.
Particularly difficult areas.
Yeah. There's a bunch of young people who don't do well, and some of those young people might be, as you suggested, young people who are experiencing homelessness. So in New South Wales, at least, we know that 40% of the homelessness population are young people aged under 25 years.
40% of homeless people are, yes, under 25.
Under 25.
And those aren't necessarily the people that you would see living in Central Station or something like that. A lot of those people are living couch surfing or they're living in cars and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's right. Youth homelessness in Australia is largely unseen. So it's not necessarily sleeping rough, but it might be young people who are, as you suggested, couch surfing, but also living in overcrowded accommodation, going from friend's house to friend's house to friend's house as they kind of seek to maintain stability in other lives.
Okay. How does it differ when you say regional areas? Are we talking about there's homelessness in regional areas as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of people think of homelessness as a metro issue.
Yes.
As something that only happens in the cities, but it does happen in the regions as well, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
I actually visited northeast of New South Wales, around the Richmond River sort of area, and they have incredibly high homelessness and youth homelessness up there around Byron Bay and Ballina and that sort of thing. It's not an area that you would associate with homelessness, but a lot of it is happening there. Are there other hotspots around in regional areas outside of New South Wales that you're aware of?
There certainly are. I think what this brings us back to is the housing situation for young people more broadly. So while we see home ownership in decline, we also see young people struggling to find affordable rental properties. We also see the social housing system become clogged, and that definitely has an impact on youth homelessness, where young people are pushed out of the options we do have for housing, and that's exacerbating the issue.
What numbers do you have on housing affordability for younger people? You know, we often talk about it. You know, older people might say, you know, I found it difficult to buy a house too. Rent was a big chunk of my paycheck. Do you have numbers showing how difficult it is at the moment?
Off the top of my head, there was a study done by Anglicare Australia, and they kind of look at rental stress. So rental stress is when you're paying 30% or more than 30% of your income on housing. And in Sydney, at least, we see that I think it's 1 in 15 dwellings are affordable.
Oh, they're affordable.
One yes, in 15 1 in 15.
For people who are on lower incomes.
That's right. The issue with that is that when it comes to young people accessing affordable housing, they're often competing with families, and they are tend to be not necessarily discriminated against, but less competitive in a rental market, particularly around affordable housing.
Mm. And you get situations like that in other big capital cities around Australia as well. And I know there's quite a lot of housing stress in Melbourne and a fair bit of youth homelessness there as well. You are listening to The Nightlife here on ABC Radio. My name is Matt Bevan, and Jackie McKenzie is my guest for this hour. She is the Policy and Advocacy Manager at Youth Action, which is the peak group for young people in New South Wales. And I'm keen on your thoughts on this discussion. If you're a young person, or if there are young people in your life, are things going well? Are they struggling? Are they happy? I'm keen to avoid sweeping generalisations about the younger generations, because I think there's enough of those around generally. But if you have observations or experiences from your own life, or if you have some, if you work in the field of, perhaps you work in real estate, perhaps you work in various fields that deal with this sort of issue, I'm keen to hear from you, very keen to hear from you this evening. 1-300-800-222 is my phone number, or 0467-922-702 is the number to text on. I've got a text from John Murray in Ben Bullen, who says the older generations only had to pay 3.5 to 4 times their annual wage in order to pay off their home, and most couldn't do that until they retired. Now it's 9 to 11 times the annual wage in order to buy a home in certain areas. Is that number correct?
Yeah, that's pretty correct. So in 1975, it took people 3 years to save a deposit for a house, and it was about 4 times their annual income. But in 2015, at least, we're seeing the average Sydney home buyer takes 9 years to save a house deposit, and the average home costs 12 times the annual income.
Mm.
What's coupled with that is we're also seeing a stagnation in income growth. So people who bought a house perhaps in 1975 saw a period of really fast income growth, but that's certainly not the case now.
Oh, I see. So the income growth is another issue that we probably should look at, because in the past you could expect a certain amount of inflation to go with your income, and you're saying that's not happening at the moment?
No, we haven't seen incomes grow in quite some time, but I guess what happens is that that income growth enabled people who bought a house back in 1975 to take a huge chunk off their mortgage.
Hmm. Right. Okay. You're listening to The Nightlife, and Jackie McKenzie is here from Youth Action. David is on the line too. G'day, David.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. What would you like to say about this issue?
Well, I don't want to give, like, the worst thing you can give to a youngster is advice, because they don't necessarily take it. So I give food for thought.
Sure, by all means. We're hungry for food for thought.
Well, I'm 60-odd, and when I was just out of university, and there's one thing that should be considered, I wasn't struggling. I was never going to starve, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
My family was well. But I took a house in the southwest of Western Australia for $40 a month and shared it with my brother. So it was $20 a month rent. And it was possibly the best time of my life.
Mm-hmm.
We were surfing, but I'm saying look for some sort of broader horizons. And the rent may not be very much. In fact, if you had the right relationship with the landowner, you might be looking after the place for them. That's all I've got to say. I'm just saying look for some, like, geographical possibilities, you know?
Okay. David, thank you so much for the call. There's David there. David raises an interesting point about moving to somewhere where you can afford. But what do we see in terms of where most of the employment that is available to young people is? Is it in the affordable housing areas?
I think what we see, and again, I'm going to use Sydney as an example, but sure, a lot of the jobs are in the east, and a lot of young people.
I think
people
we can think of Sydney as an extreme example, yes, but this sort of thing is happening in all major capital cities. You see, I mean, housing is quite affordable in Hobart, and Darwin is certainly, the housing prices are coming down in Darwin at the moment, and you can certainly still buy a house in certain parts of Brisbane as well, but in other parts of the country, it is quite difficult. So go on.
No, you're right. I was just saying that, using Sydney as an example, that for young people, there's a lot of jobs in the east and there's a lot of young people in the west. And so there is a bit of a mismatch between where the jobs are and where young people are. We do see young people moving to the fringes of the community, and I don't think that's necessarily a good thing. Young people are a crucial part of our community, and we need to see them, and they need to be part of community life. But when they're pushed out to the fringes, and when transport isn't necessarily making that connection for them, then how much harder do we make it for them to access educational opportunities and employment opportunities?
Mm. Mind you, surfing on the southwest of WA does sound pretty good. Adam is on the phone. Adam, what are your thoughts on this?
Oh, good evening.
Good evening.
This is a very interesting program. Just quickly, with the generational divide, it's widely held that there was the baby boomer generation circa 1945 to early 60s.
Mm.
And then the conventional wisdom is that was superseded by Generation X.
Yes.
Well, that's arguable that in between those two generations is what's known as the blank generation, which counts for about a 5-6 year period, roughly. And these people are discounted because Generation X are essentially the children of the boomers, so they can identify, but that's another matter. Now, down to statistical realities, the boomer generation account for the majority of votes in most electorates in Australia. So no matter what platitudes our elected representatives may pander at election time, they have to fit their policy to that demographic. Now, I'm glad you mentioned Hobart before, because it's a simple formula. Young people just need to go and sign up with a major political party and simply prevail by numbers at any local branch meeting. And in the seat of Denison, it's widely held that some Labor members may not be re-elected in the next state election in Hobart, seat of Denison. So any young people out there, I'd say go straight to Hobart. It's a place to be. Anyway, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for the call. There's Adam there with a bit of a political tip for us. That's an interesting point made there by Adam. Now, we've got Scott on the line as well. Scott, you've got a story about your son?
Yes, good evening to you. Yes, I'm having the same issues as probably a lot of parents out there at the moment. My son left school about 6 months ago, and I'm noticing the differences between, obviously, when I left school and when he has left school, and the inconsistencies that I'm finding with him seeking employment and so forth.
So he's, what sort of field is he trying to find employment in?
Well, really anything at the moment. I'll put it this way. For example, when I left school, which is in the early 80s, I mean, I could go and work possibly, you know, bank opportunities. And in fact, I started with one of the major banks when I left school. But I'm noticing that the employers now all want everyone to have a HSC, whereas initially you could always get a position, even though it was on the ground, but you could start off with your school certificate. And so it was a good grounding to be able to understand the basics of work, you know, having to get up regularly, receiving also a paycheck each week, and things like budgeting and so forth that you're able to do. So I've noticed that, you know, employers aren't exactly making it easy either, because they're making the students that apply for those jobs have much greater grades or qualifications than really a lot of the jobs really need.
Mm. Jackie.
Yeah, I think you've really hit the nail on the head there in that what happened in the global financial crisis, surely, is that young people were the first to lose their jobs. And most of those jobs, or lots of those jobs, are entry-level jobs. So young people kind of come in as a receptionist, and they learn those skills on the job. But what we've seen now is when we don't have those entry-level roles, we don't have that transition for young people into the workplace. And employers certainly expect young people to come into a workplace work-ready with some of those soft skills, but without the actual role to gain a foothold and learn some of those things.
Mm-hmm. Is that your experience, Scott? Your son's experience? Yeah.
Yes, it certainly has been. I mean, even go back to the state where the situation where we had the Sydney County Council, and they used to provide apprenticeships for line technicians and so forth. Well, everything's been privatised now, so naturally the new people who are trying to turn a profit on the organisation want people with skills up and ready. Mm. But the kids are finding that, how do I get the skills? Exactly the old cliche is, how do I get the skills if I can't start at the basics and learn my way up?
Yeah, I think there's a whole extra hour-long discussion to be had about trade skills and picking that sort of thing up. Scott, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you very much. Great discussion.
That's Scott there calling in about his son. I've got a text here regarding housing costs. Few people raise the effect of bank deregulation and kending behaviour leading to a boom. Banks and pollies should be held accountable, but are not. Tell this to young and old. That's from Brian. So I've also got Bob on the phone with a point about you're in an older generation, Bob.
I am. I'm in my 70s. I believe I was born in the lucky generation. I went to school. I went through to high school. I left school. I had people chasing me to come and work for them. I went and I studied. I studied hard. I did my accounting degree. I bought a block of land when I was 18. I was married when I was 22. I built a house with my wife when we were 24. I retired when I was 60. I'm now living down in Ulladulla. Well, we call it paradise, but you know.
Of course, yeah.
So I believe, as I said, I believe I was in the lucky generation. But now, apart from that, I look back at the different generations that have come through. My grandparents moved from the Hawkesbury River up to Granville. They had to walk. They had to walk and carry their belongings on a tray, like a horse and tray. My father and mother had an ice chest. They had a hole in the floor so the water could get away. We had a refrigerator. We had a colour TV at the end of it. People now, what I'm trying to get at is that we want more than what our parents had. We want to get better and better and better. And obviously it costs us more money. And we just aren't prepared to work for it, I think my main point is that we just want more than what our parents had.
Mm. Thank you so much for the call, Bob. And that goes to your point of saying that this generation of younger people between 15 and 25 may be the first to have it worse off than their parents. You mean financially or in other areas as well?
Yeah, no, it's certainly financially. So studies have shown that young people are going to be the first to pay more than what they have received. So there's this generational bargain of you work hard, you pay taxes, and then you can retire and you can kind of rest easy. I think what I liked about what Bob was saying was that it's not just about wanting more than what the previous generation had, but laying the groundwork for the generations to come and saying that what we've done now, we've built infrastructure, we've built a great education system, and we're going to leave that as a legacy to you to thrive and survive. And certainly, you know, with an aging population, we want young people to be thriving and surviving because they will be paying the way and supporting quite a booming aging population.
Of course, yeah. Yes, it's today's taxpayers that will need to support the retirees of the future, of course. Now, you're listening to The Nightlife. It's 28 minutes until the next ABC News. Jackie McKenzie is my guest. We're talking about youth issues, I suppose, is what we're talking about broadly, but we're talking about the comparison between younger generations and older generations primarily at the moment. By the way, Jackie is Policy and Advocacy Manager at Youth Action. She's with me here, and so is Shelley. G'day, Shelley.
Oh, hi. I was just thinking whether what I had to say was valid. I've got a couple of points. I think that when I think back to my younger days, clusters with quite a few people in the house was more important. The community, the communal living was more important than the actual standard of the building itself. And we had more fun, and we didn't really care that we had less money. That's my memory of my younger days, because we had a very interesting kind of life. The second issue I want to say was, I really believe a lot of young people, particularly men, are finding it difficult to learn how to contribute to society, and therefore a lot of the older people in my generation believe that national service without the military inclusion, in other words, not for going to war, would be a very good idea for some of these younger people, men and women, who are struggling and confused with what direction they should go in. Some learning how to contribute, like Bob a Job, you know, you probably don't remember that, but learning how to help other people in the community without expecting a lot of money for it, but still getting something for it and realising the benefit of working together as a team. And the third issue was, I think that older people, if you put them all together, some of the younger people could benefit from actually living with the older people instead of putting so many older people into, you know, retirement homes, etc. Okay. Putting them together with the older people, they would learn from the older people some of the wisdom that the older people have.
Okay, Shelley. Jackie, your response?
Yeah, there's two things I'd like to say. We did a survey earlier in 2016 talking to around about 3,500 young people across Australia. They told us what were the most important issues to them. And the top three were positive policies for asylum seekers, supporting marriage equality, and addressing climate change. So we're actually seeing a generation that's incredibly generous and incredibly connected to broader social issues. But I think you've really hit on a idea that's very passionate to Youth Action, certainly, and that's the model of homeshare. So homeshare is a housing model that addresses the underutilisation of housing. It connects young people who are looking for affordable rental properties with older people who want to age in place. And there's this intergenerational exchange, not just of knowledge, but of companionship. Hmm. It's a really great idea. We'd really like to see it up and running in New South Wales.
Okay, Shelley. So work may be underway to work on that last idea at least. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for the call. That's Shelley on the line there. I've got Benjamin as well. Benjamin, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I grew up on a farm, and I was paid 50 cents an hour. I'm in my mid-40s, right? And so, you know, I'm not the youngest nor the oldest. And I think Bob had some very good points, because one of the things that I learned as a young man was, well, it wasn't until later when I thought, what do other kids do on a weekday or a weekend, when I had to deal with cattle, I had to deal with crops, I had to deal with the chooks, I had to deal with the pigs, right? And that was all fine for me. It was normal behaviour, because I learned that ethic from my father and mother.
Mm-hmm.
So as I grew, I kept that same ethic. What the trouble, I think, is exactly, once again, what Bob said, it's what people expect. They want to have this four-bedroom, four-bathroom house. You know, we don't need to progress to that degree. Australia has, the last I read, was the largest houses in the world. So you and me, we live in big houses, you know. You might see these lovely Hollywood places and they look all fantastic on telly, but they're not really anything like what we own, you know.
Benjamin, mm-hmm. I mean, the counterpoint could potentially be, you know, what younger people expect. If you were to compare it with Bob, if younger people want to have a family by the age of 24, as Bob said he did, a young family like that, it can be difficult for them to afford even an apartment in certain parts of the country. Let alone an enormous four bedroom two bathroom house.
Well, I'll give you a reverse example. My stepson, what has he bought? not a place for himself. He's bought an investment property.
Mm.
Get my point?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like, well, let's look at this. And then why is the rental so high? Why are houses difficult to purchase? Because people keep wanting the bigger, better deal. And that's not the best thing in the world, because no one actually seems to look at this communal situation. You know, we're like, as a family, you know, as a group of people looking out for one another. And that's one of the crucial issues. We need to look at our neighbours. We need to look at our community.
Okay.
Isn't that what's really crucial? You know, not what we have. Like the kid who goes to school has got an iPad, an iPhone, but goes home and there's no parent time. So, well, geez, when I got home, my mum was home.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, well, wait on. Let's get our priorities right. Let's work out what's important about the structure of not just a family, but what's important as far as, you know, maintaining this consistency through society. You know, it's like that, you know, that tribal thing. You know, it's like the tribes work together. They work as, you know, the mother might take care of somebody else's child, whilst the, you know,
communal living, I suppose, is what you're saying. Yeah,
not communal living. No, I'm talking.
Well,
about
not necessarily communal living, but yeah, I understand. Benjamin, thank you so much.
Sharing.
Thank you so much for the call, Benjamin.
But I'd like some feedback from the lass.
Oh yeah, sure. Jackie, what are your thoughts?
Her point of view is,
I think a slang that we hear quite often is that young people have super high expectations and they should really kind of bring it down a little bit. But I think certainly the young people that we talk to, their aspirations are pretty ordinary. They want to have a job. They want to contribute to society. They want to, I guess, have stability and security that was available to previous generations before them. I think that's pretty reasonable.
Mm.
And I think we certainly should be looking at how we can assist them to attain those basic
goals. They're not looking
out
for themselves. You've got to look out for your community. You know, of course, the planet's important, society's important, and all that sort of stuff. But your family, you know, that's what is the most important. And it's not just the individuals and their mother and father, sister, brother, uncle, aunt. It's about the actual unity of society. You know, like Australia's so multicultural. You know, we've got to embrace that. You know, we've got to go and work together. And people aren't willing to work together.
Okay.
They're resentful.
Thanks so much for your call, Benjamin. That's Benjamin, who's called in on 1-300-800-222 to join our conversation about young people at the moment. We're speaking with Jackie McKenzie, who is a policy and advocacy manager for Youth Action, which is a peak body in New South Wales. Matt Bevan's my name, and you're listening to The Nightlife on ABC Radio. That number, again, is 1-300-800-222. I've got a text here, Jackie, which says, perhaps the new national service, this is referring to an earlier call, perhaps the new national service is unpaid internships, which sort of brings us around to working conditions once you even have a job. I mean, we're talking about unemployment among young people, but the conditions once you actually have a job can be difficult as well.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, unpaid internships is certainly a hot topic right now. Because there are less entry-level roles, we're seeing more and more young people moving into unpaid internships. I guess the real issue, or one of the issues that represents, is that if you can afford to work unpaid for a period of time, that's fine. But there's a whole bunch of young people who can't. They have to pay rent. They have to pay expenses. And so what we see, or what I expect we will see, will be a growing inequality between a generation or within a generation, where young people who can afford to work unpaid are getting the experience and they're moving ahead and they're getting jobs, whereas those who can't won't.
That's an interesting point, actually. Brock has given us a call. Brock, you're 23, so you're in the exact age group we're talking about. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, the last comment from your guest tonight really sort of hit on the mark of what I wanted to inject into the debate. We've heard earlier this week Senator Leinhelm's comments about how young single people contribute the greatest tax contribution, and I'm fortunate that I've had the benefit of a tertiary education. I work, you know, on average a 50 to 60 hour week in a professional career now. I'm one of those people, but I feel a great sense of guilt that I've obviously taken the advantages of the advanced education system we have now. I've acquired those sorts of skills for the new generation, but the real tension I feel is that I don't know that I want to contribute more when I know that so much of my tax take is already going to support the multitude of services that are available in the community.
Mm.
I guess it's uncomfortable to see others struggling and you want to give the support, but there's really not a great push, I feel, amongst my generation to support my peers on issues like housing affordability and accessing jobs. As the guest said earlier, marriage equality, climate, these are the causes of our generation. I just think we've lost the social education that really helps pull your peers up by their bootstraps, to use that expression as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, actually, because, you know, you watch Q&A and there's a young person on the show and you can guess that the question will be most likely about one of those broader issues, not necessarily one of the issues that maybe affects them themselves. Thank you so much for the call, Brock. Brock has given us a call and won 1-300-800-222. I do want to ask you a couple of more serious issues as well. We're seeing recently a large increase in attention given to domestic violence among the broader community. How is domestic violence affecting younger people?
Domestic and family violence has a large impact on young people. We certainly see young people and young women as at high risk of experiencing domestic and family violence, not only as part of a family, but not only witnessing it, but also in their own relationships.
Hmm. And when they're witnessing it, what sort of an example are older generations setting to younger generations when it comes to this sort of thing? Is it an intergenerational problem that it spreads?
I think that we need to look at how young people are exposed to a community and what we can do to support them to understand what is domestic and family violence, to identify it, and I guess change the story. For us young people, they're at this life stage where they're forming their values, they're forming their identity, they're starting to engage in relationships for the first time, and we have an opportunity to circuit break some of these things that drive domestic and family violence, which is rigid stereotypes of gender, disrespect for women. We have seen in New South Wales the implementation, or at least the announcement, that we're going to start to do respectful relationships in schools, which is a really, really good start.
Okay. What about, speaking of schools, that's a place where you see a lot of cyberbullying and issues with the internet, which are new for this generation. How are we going with coping with those issues as a society, I suppose?
Yeah, look, violence is never acceptable. The thing about bullying is that we see it expanding online, which means that for young people there is no respite. So it's 24/7. It's not just at school, but it's in the home. For us, you know, the most important thing is that all young people, regardless of whether they're on the end of bullying or doing the bullying, is that they're supported and protected. There's an excellent project that I recommend anyone to have a look at, which is called Project Rocket. It was a youth-led organisation that's targeting this very issue and is going into schools and working with young people to look at how we can do things differently.
Okay. You're listening to The Nightlife. Jackie McKenzie is my guest. We're talking about young youth issues. Matt Bevan is my name, and we'll be taking more of your calls in just a moment.
Speaking Out has given a voice to Indigenous politics, sport and culture for over 25 years.
Our children should be conversant in both their own languages and English. And they can't be equipped to do that if they don't have bicultural education.
It's difficult to think of any more disadvantaged Australians than Aboriginal people with disabilities.
Speaking Out, Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio, or listen on demand at abc.net.au/speakingout or via the ABC Radio app.
It's summertime on ABC Local Radio.
Yes, this is The Nightlife. Matt Bevan is my name, and we've got a lot of calls coming through. I'm keen to get to as many of them as we can before the news, which is coming up in about 13 minutes from now. Starting with Missy, who is on the line. G'day, Missy.
Oh, hi.
What are your thoughts, Missy?
First of all, I'd like to thank the young man who was just on recently for paying his taxes to keep me in the style to which I've become accustomed as an aged pensioner.
I'm sure you're welcome would be his answer. You sound delightful.
I just like to. I rang up because of that gentleman in his 70s. I'm a bit older than that, and I try to understand the younger generation, but this obsession with buying your own home. I went to get a home loan when I was in my late 30s, and I couldn't get one because I was a single woman. And
yeah.
we couldn't do it, and we didn't pay super. And my brother had to go as my guarantor to get my first home loan. It was really quite amusing at the time. It was frustrating, but amusing. I don't understand why a lot of young people don't live at home, until they can afford to perhaps move out into rented property, and so they can save to buy something. But I quite agree with someone who mentioned about the big house, with all the latest things that open and shut in it, and a mortgage that's, an unbelievable figure as far as I'm concerned, because those amounts of money don't compute. But I do try to understand, and I don't condemn people because of that thing, but it just worries me that what it means in the long term is that couples now are not having children until they're quite old to be parents in their 30s, late 30s and 40s.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for the call, Missy. What are your thoughts on this, Jackie?
Missy's quite right. We do see young people staying at home, living with their parents for longer, probably much their parents' children. But I think what she raises is, you can stay at home for longer and you can save up to get a deposit, but then you're still not accessing or achieving security and stability. And it's not just the housing ownership issue, but it's a rental affordability issue. So when we do see the home ownership more and more out of reach for young people, we're certainly not seeing seeing security and stability coming to the rental market. So it would be great to see that young people and families could have security of tenure and not see themselves kicked out of rental properties for at a moment's notice.
Missy, thank you so much for the call. Brock,
my pleasure.
Brock has sent a text in, by the way, and says you're very welcome.
Thank you, Brock.
Missy there giving us a call on 1300 800 222. I've got Jessica on the line. Jessica, good evening.
Oh, good evening.
It sounds like you've got a little person in the background there.
I do. I've got a few little people running around.
Very, very young people. The youth of the future. Mm-hmm. What would you like to say, Jessica?
Oh, just that I very much understand a lot of the problems you guys have been talking about tonight. About 10 years ago, I left school, went into a traineeship, never had a problem, left work. Now that I'm trying to get back into work after having a few kids, absolutely nothing out there. I've never had this much trouble finding a job in my life. And my only option at the moment is to work for free, which isn't really much of an option when you have kids and school fees to pay for, which is so frustrating. Mm. And I was also listening to before about the domestic violence. I mean, I would have been about 20 when I got out of my domestically violent relationship with a little 1.5-year-old at the time, ended up homeless on the street, practically living in my car, didn't have any family support, which was always really quite hard. And the only thing that stopped me from becoming a statistic was the RAISE Foundation, which was a mentoring group that matched young mums up with older mums, and it was them that got me into a refuge and got me a place and back on my feet. So, I don't know, I just feel that the government should put more effort into actually funding programs like that, helping and educating their youth instead of blaming us for the problems.
Jackie, what are your thoughts on Jessica's issues?
First of all, Jessica, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I think it's really important to highlight what impact domestic and family violence can have on people and then on their lives. And I'm so, so glad that there was a service out there who was able to assist you. I think mentoring relationships is such an important thing for young people who really just need a bit of space and a bit of support to move on to the next thing.
Make you realise that you're not alone in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope there's lots of people listening to the show tonight who know that there's services out there to support them and know that they're not alone in facing these issues. So thank you.
Thank you so much for the call, Jessica, and good luck with the little people running around.
Yeah, they're supposed to be in bed, but they heard me talking.
Oh, well, the radio man says go to bed. Thanks so much for the call.
Company doing the dishes.
Thanks so much for the call, Jessica. Jessica there, she called in on 1-300-800-222. It's 8 minutes to the news here on The Nightlife on ABC Radio. My name's Matt Bevan. Jamie is with us. Jamie, you're also in this age group. What are your thoughts?
Hi, Matt. I pretty much agree with quite a lot of your older callers. I think that some of the people my age are a little bit unrealistic. Quite a lot of people, when they talk about I can't afford a home, they probably need to be putting an asterisk on there saying I can't afford a home in the exact suburb or town that I want, or I can't afford a home of the size I want in the town I want. So I'm 27 and I've been working basically full time since I got out of high school. So I did a accounting degree and worked full time the whole time I was studying. Have now bought a 2-bedroom unit, which is fine because it's nice and in the middle of the city, and that's fine with me. But I guess people need to pick and choose a little bit the luxuries they have. So people want the holidays and all the tech gadgets and the weekends out every weekend. Even by picking maybe one or two of those and not the other, you get ahead quite quickly. But because people want all of them, everything's hard to achieve. Well, of course it is, because you're trying to have your finger in every pie, I guess, is what I was kind of getting at.
Yeah. Jamie, Jackie, what are your thoughts on this?
I think this is a common misconception that young people are spending their money on frivolous items. We saw how that conversation around smashed avocado
chat that lasted a week and a bit. Yeah.
There was some research that was put out at the end of last year, or certainly an opinion piece by John Daly at the Grattan Institute, that showed that actually, rather than young people spending and going on all these holidays and things like that, that all ages currently are saving more than before. So I think that's an interesting view that might differ from this idea that young people are just spending money on all these different silly things rather than and giving up the idea of owning a home. So, yeah, it's interesting.
What about the idea of younger people living in the area that they want to live in? You know, there is housing, or there's always housing available if you're willing to commute a bit. Why aren't younger people living in that home, in that housing?
I don't know that young people aren't.
Okay.
I don't know that young people aren't actually moving to the fringes of our cities and doing big commutes because they can actually afford housing there. I haven't seen anything to say that that's not the case.
Okay. Yeah, you're listening to The Nightlife on ABC Radio. We're 5 minutes before the next ABC News, and I have Murray on the line. G'day, Murray.
Yeah, how you going there, mate?
Good, good. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I've listened to a few of the people talk, and Jessica's point about the government's involvement I thought was very strong. Well, I just want to give a couple of quick points. Point number one would be, I'm a 1960 child, and I was brought up when it was pretty easy to get an apprenticeship, right? And I really believe the government has let the young people down through not having the apprenticeship schemes available to what they were back when I did my time in about 1975. And the other thing I want to say is this. I'm up in Donga at the moment, renovating a house that I'm doing at the moment, and me and my partner Judy walked into the surf shop the other day, and it's up for sale, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the lady that we're talking to, her daughter at 23 years of age really wants to buy this business, and the only reason why she can't is because she doesn't have a credit line, because she obviously owns a car that she bought through working. So what I'm saying to the governments today is you've got to get off your high horse and really help the young people out there who don't need to show that they're in debt or they have to pay back debt. If they've got the adequate, the business itself will look after itself. And I really got on my high horse about that, because I thought, hang on, you're telling me your daughter, she's always got out and bought everything, and we've had no problems with her. And she, you know, and I just think this mentality that we have in the bank system of showing debt before you get into something, and that really pees me off a bit, a little bit older. And I just think the governments have to really start standing up for the young people today.
Okay.
And get on their, and get off their high horse of what we used to.
Murray, we're just coming up to the news, Murray, and I do just want to get Jackie's response to this, because Murray is the second person to raise government, what government are doing for younger people. Someone earlier was saying, that older generations make up a bulk of the electorate, so those are the people that are winning over the politicians' favour. How much political heft do younger people have at the moment?
They do have quite a bit of political heft, but you're right, it is balanced out by this massive ageing population. I don't agree with this idea that boomers shouldn't vote in the interest of young people, because when they're ageing and they're relying on a tax base to pay that way and to help with their pensions and superannuation tax and all that kind of thing, it's in their interest that young people are engaged in education, that young people are engaged in employment, that young people are supporting the economy to thrive. But I also think that with this government, we certainly haven't seen them put a primary focus on young people. What that would look like would be a minister for children and young people that gets up every day and makes sure that young people aren't just caged into these issues of education or into issues of employment, but the whole aspect of the young person is addressed across government. So there's a focal point within government to make sure that youth issues are addressed.
Mm-hmm. Jackie, thank you so much for coming in and having this conversation with us. We have a lot of calls that we weren't able to get to tonight, and I do apologise, but we had a lot of discussion, both through text message and through the phone. Jackie, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, and thank you so much for all the calls.
No worries. Now, that's Jackie McKenzie, who is a Policy and Advocacy Manager at Youth Action.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.